Hi, my name's Ryan. I've been a supporter of Paul's for many years now. I wish to get the podcast and video creation part of the system we call Paul back up to full speed. And I think Patreon support is a big part of that system. Go over to patreon.com/Paul Wheaton. Make a pledge for each artifact that Paul creates. Again, the site is patreon.com/Paul Wheaton. You can also find the link in the podcast notes. Enjoy the podcast.
This is part one of a two-part podcast.
All right. I think it's going. I think it's happening. I think it's recording.
Seeing a little red. Yes?
You see a dot?
I see a little red dot flashing at me saying recording.
Be careful what you say now. It could be used in a court of law against you. So we're recording a podcast to talk about the up-and-coming 2017 permaculture design course. And it starts on May 28th, is that right?
That's right.
Okay. And it goes through June 10th. So, yeah, looking at it now, Sunday, May 28th through Saturday, June 10th. A traditional 14-day course, and it'll be immediately followed by the appropriate technology course. And you taught the appropriate technology course here last year, and that was a huge hit. That was a massive success. People very much enjoyed that. At the appropriate technology course, I think one of the big things that people were the most excited about is not only, you know, a bunch of things that you built, but just getting experience in welding and some basic woodworking. So everybody got a chance to weld. I came out there at several different times to see each and every student welding. So it was like a welding course.
Yeah, it's a surprising thing that it's not something that you consider, and yet every appropriate technology course that I've done, one of the big hits is suddenly people are hands-on that may not have been. I mean, my trade means that I've used, you know, power tools and welded since I was probably 17, and yet you forget that, hey, it's not particularly common. So it's great to see people get the confidence to just have a go. And it's amazing how quickly you can get reasonably competent. I mean, and you can build stuff. So it doesn't have to look perfect as long as it works.
Now, for the ATC was huge. Everybody just loved you. I mean, when I went and I visited with each of the students, they were like, I want to have the course now go on for two more months and keep this going. I don't want to ever stop. And so you had you know big results, but you have an even earlier history with me and this site and things that are done here. You're one of the innovators for the Innovators event.
Yeah. So that was what was that 3 years ago now?
First one was 2014, and then we did one in 2015.
Yep. You go on.
And the thing that you built the first year was the Cocket Locket Rocket.
Yes.
And that is a rocket, a J-tube rocket oven and griddle and water heater.
That's right.
And the name is weird, but we had a whole ceremony to come up with a name for the thing.
Yes, it was by popular vote, and the prize was a six-pack of beer.
So then in the second Innovators event in 2015, you made something that is very similar, but it's much nicer, much larger, and more and better.
Yeah, well, the reason that I made the Cocket Rocket Locket the first time round was that people had always sort of, but immediately when humans get a good idea, they try and make it very complex. So invariably when you're talking to people about building rocket stoves, they suddenly wanted to not only heat their homes, but to cook their dinner, heat their water, dry their herbs, and, you know, maybe dry the wood out of their wood pile. So it becomes very complex trying to achieve a lot of things. And I've always said that, yes, you could do possibly two things at once, but if you get to three, you'll probably do them all quite poorly. And 2000, but never having tried it. So 2014 was it?
Yeah.
Was an attempt to see, well, maybe instead of saying it can't be done, look at the possibilities of how it could be done. So I think I proved my point to myself that it probably did two things quite well. But it did one thing fairly poorly, which was the heating of the water. But it certainly gave me some ideas about it. But the next year was simply about, I saw that there was a need, that here's a place that's known worldwide for its innovation in rocket stoves, and yet most of that innovation is in heating. And I live in the subtropics, so heating's not big on my agenda unless it's heating food or water. So I could see that there was a need there for the ability to cook on rocket stoves. And I've done some work with barrel ovens. I love using recycled 55-gallon drums. And so what I did pretty much was split those functions that I'd done the year before. And so I incorporated a water heater into the griddle and had a standalone oven, simply because one of the things you lose when you integrate too many things is the ability to separately manipulate the heat. So it was just, I could see that something like that would be more practical and had more chance of all the components being used. And so in the ATC course last year, we actually, I think we cooked pizza, and Big Rob gave me heaps about that because I'm trying to get the maximum temperature because I'm a pyromaniac. And yet we were basically biocharring. I was biocharring the pizza, and yet it was still cold on the inside. So I got banned from using the oven, but later on, won back some mojo by cooking a giant turkey in there to absolute perfection, if I do say so myself. So, it proved that it was very versatile. And we actually cooked quite a bit of stuff on the griddle and the oven during the ATC course, which is what we should be doing, because the only way that we can change our lifestyles very often is if we change our technologies. So it was a good demonstration of what can be done.
And then in 2014, when I very first met you, then suddenly all these stories started pouring out about all of your history with Jeff Lawton. And I had no idea that you had that much history. But on top of that, not only were you his land manager for, was it 3 years?
Yeah, about that.
But on top of that, you ran point on several of the PDCs that were taught there. So while technically it's Jeff's name on the banners on all the posters, that you were actually the guy pulling it all together, making it work, and doing most of the teaching. Is that accurate?
I've got to be accurate and say it probably wouldn't be most of the teaching, but a high proportion of it. I was doing a lot of the teaching. Like, we ran internships there, 10-week internships. And for some of those, Jeff was away for pretty much the entire internship. So at those times, I was running the farm and doing all the teaching on site with a small staff of about three and some woofers. So I did a lot of teaching there. I did a lot of the curriculum development for running the internships, and co-taught with some really cool people. I co-taught a little bit with Warren Brush. I did the appropriate technology side of the courses with him. And I've also done PDCs in other places in NZ and down south here in Australia. So,
the thing I want to point out is that last year we had a PDC, and we were, I mean, our first PDC here was 2 years ago, and it was offered as a free PDC. It was taught by somebody else.
Yep.
And so totally free, and we had a decent turnout. We did allow some people to come, like, at the last minute and added them, and they paid something like $400 or something like that.
Yep.
I can't remember how much we charged last year, but we charged a little bit more. I mean, we're getting better at it every year. And then you taught the ATC, which immediately followed the PDC last year. And then that's when you were telling me about how you had some very strong philosophies about how a PDC should be taught. And then the more we talked, the more it was kind of like, this is a next generation PDC we're going to do next year. And now's the time. Now we're pulling it off. Now it's all coming together. It's happening. And so it's like from all those conversations, I really like what's about to happen this year at this PDC. First, I like that, you know, during the course, that during, you know, the main part of the day, that there's no videos. I mean, that did seem a little odd to me, that it kind of seems like in school, if the teacher ever shows you a video, it's because the teacher doesn't want to teach that day. And I kind of feel like for a PDC, you're coming to be taught and have an interactive experience, but you can't interact with a video. And so there was some of that. But we were doing some stuff on the super cheap the last 2 years. So I think, you know, we get to get away with that a little bit. But this year, I kind of feel like this PDC that we're about to do is going to be possibly – I mean, I don't know. Is it possible that it will be the best? But you got to figure that on any given year, there's got to be a good 100 PDCs around the world, maybe 200 PDCs taught. And let's not forget, Jeff Lawton has his online PDC, and everything I've heard is that it's really good. And so, you know, a lot of people are just going to take that, and they'll be staying in their nice, comfortable home while taking a lovely PDC. And I kind of feel like, okay, we've, you know, are we going to be better than that? And I'm excited enough to think that it's possible that this will be the best. But we won't know until it's all done. But you, of course, you've taught enough PDCs that this is the way you like to teach them all the time, and this is nothing to you. But, all right, to describe the PDC that we're about to have here in May and June, it's a permaculture design course, and one of the things that you said over and over and over again is it is a design course, and that the design portion in so many other PDCs is kind of phoned in. It's the student leaves the design course having not really done very much design. I mean, they made a design. They scratched something out, but it was weak shit. And then it's like, okay, you're good. See ya. So I'd like you to share with the pod people what your idea of a permaculture design course will be like.
Okay. So first I think we need to define, and I'm not saying that all PDCs are like that, because of course we all learn from people that we work with. So a lot of the influences on how I teach PDCs are from people I've, you know, some amazing people I've met over the years. But typically, and I will say typically, not all, but typically, PDCs, you know, they all run for 14 days, and they acknowledge that, you know, it's a curriculum based on the Permaculture Designer's Manual. But, sorry, I'm not going to start diverging on it yet. So they do that. The student basically comes into class. They cover permaculture design in the first 3 days, I think, of the course, and then they move on to what I call strategies and techniques, which is kind of the pointy end of the spectrum of the pyramid. And they move on to, you know, learning about strategies in drylands or learning about temperate climates and, you know, all the things that they can then put into their design. And so by the time they get to, you know, the last 2-3 days, they're suddenly, okay, now it's time to get back to design and we want you to do a design. So suddenly they're leaping into the design, and half the time they've forgotten all the stuff that they did in the first 2-3 days. And they crank out a design and present it, and that's pretty much it. So all the time, and by this time, you know, by day 12, they're reeling under a huge burden of this information that they somehow have to make order of and assimilate, and they're shell-shocked. And so a lot of the design, and it's no fault of the student, but a lot of the design is quite poor. And, I mean, part of that is that there's that, what would you call it, that enthusiasm to show off your stuff and incorporate every single little piece of design that you can. You know, check that list. Swales in, yes. Do we have a herb spiral? Yes. Do we have hoogle beds? Yes. Do we have a saddle dam? No, but we're working on it. It's like, so it's almost like finding all the components and forcing them to fit to the design. So, I mean, I'm not saying that they're still not good courses and worthwhile taking, but, you know, I had the good fortune to work with some guys here in Australia. Dan Palmer at VEG is one of them. And he showed me, you know, in working and co-teaching PDC with a few PDCs with him, a better way of doing things. And that is that it is a design course, and it's always kind of rankled me that it ends up being almost like a skills fest in that, oh, have a try at this and let's make a compost pile and da da da. Absolutely, it's great to be hands on. But I mean, it's a permaculture designer's certificate. It's not a permaculture skills certificate or permaculture whatever. It's a designer certificate. So typically what we do now is we start on day 3. Oh, by day 3, we're deep into the design part of the course. And we say, okay, now is the time that you will be forming up into your various teams and picking your project that you will present your design on. And so each day as we finish that day, the material is organized in such a way that your design will be up to the stage that the material's being delivered at, if you get my meaning. So it means that, okay, today we are learning about doing client interviews and, you know, asking questions about the site and the early site walk and all that. And so that's the stage you're at your design. So you then, and on the end of that day, you might do your client interviews and you walk the site and, you know, just look for any resources on the site and work out your zonation, and you're just starting to build on that. And then the next day it will be the next stage, and the next day the next stage. So that all those things arrive in a timely fashion. And each day you're given the last session of the day is that you'll be working on your design. So your design is paced. It's hard to get ahead of the design. Certainly what will happen through that process is that you'll get to a point and suddenly get some information that throws a different light on something that you've already done because you didn't realize that it wasn't necessarily the best thing to do. And so you'll backtrack and redo that bit. So there's a fair bit of that. It's not scrapping work, but it's basically you're modifying as the information and your understanding unfolds, and it really gets the information in. And what it also does is, by the time you're ready to do your design, to present your design, it's not a 2 or 3 day rush scratched out on a bit of butcher's paper. It's a professional design that, you know, you could sell to a client, and they would be very happy to have that. And I've seen some of these designs. What I should say is every design I've seen from a PDC done that way has been vastly superior to the best of designs done with the old traditional method of doing all your design in the last 2 or 3 days. So I think that's really, really important. We're even having an architect coming in at one stage in one of the sessions, and they will be running students through how, you know, just the tips and tricks. We're not going to turn anyone into Picasso overnight, least of all me, but we're going to show people the tips and tricks to actually make something look really good on paper with minimal effort, just shading and how to draw trees from above and things like that, so that by the end of the PDC, you've got something that you're damn proud, not something that, oh, thank God that's over. And, you know, typically I see in PDCs where we've got that design process in place, people are, are working till 8, 9, 10, 11 o'clock at night in the last week because they're so caught up in the design process that they cannot put it down. So that's what I want. I want people to – I'm not necessarily saying that that they should race out and suddenly get themselves a job as a designer, but – it's a hell of a good start to have all these skills down pat, and then it's up to them to build their experience.
My impression is from being at a lot of different PDCs is that, first of all, the designs that are presented on the last day are generally really weak, and not only do they have a lot of problems with the design that they made, but also, just what they've presented is really weak, and I kind of feel like that if they wanted to go and do a design later, that I don't think that they would have great confidence in doing a design. And so then, based on the things that we've talked about, where it sounds like rather than starting the design on like day 10 or day 11, that what you're saying is that your students will start drawing their first design on day 3 or day 4. And then they're going to get feedback from instructors. And already you've been talking to, I know that, like, you talked to me, Ernie and Erica will be there for the whole thing, and you've talked to them about this. And then, of course, you're talking to Davin Hoyt, who's an architect, about coming out and doing this also. Giving every student feedback on what they've created each day for the last 10 days of the event, instead of trying to squeeze something out in just a couple of days before the end of the event.
Absolutely. So that means that, you know, the student can arrive at the destination, which is a good final design, by small course corrections, rather than almost like flying to Tokyo when you want to get to London and then having to, you know, kind of fly all that extra distance. So it's like small course corrections to keep you on track, and you'll get a much better design that way, because you're constantly getting the feedback. Each instructor that's there, be they guest instructor or whatever, during their time there, we'll all be available and down in the auditorium on that last session of the afternoon. So it's a case of the students will be working on their design and be like, oh, is that possible? We need to ask that question. and we'll be there. So they come up and we have a discussion. I come over and might look at the design and say, yep, that looks good. Have you considered? I mean, there's got to be a very, you've got to be very careful that you're not designing. So you can't say, no, don't do this or do that. So it's got to be, you've got to be very careful of that. But it's reassuring of students that you keep bringing it back to reality. Because a lot of these designs, what I see is that there's often flights of fantasy with, and it's understandable, but flights of fantasy with what the design can actually achieve. And it's human nature to be optimistic about things and to discount information. So, you know, during the course, we will be hammering away at the fact that your design, we will be asking questions. I mean, we won't be tearing people apart, but we will be asking you, you know, to justify why you have something in a design. And you can't go, oh, like there's, you know, I'm going to say this in metric, but, you know, that's a 10-meter square garden and that's going to feed us all our salad greens through summer. And you might go, for that, I'm sorry, but for that many people, that's not going to happen. So you need to go away and research that. So it's a case of the designs will be real world and be applicable rather than things that might look good on paper but aren't thought out. You know, someone says, oh, and we're going to keep a goat here. It might be, well, there's not enough fodder there for goats. So if you can give me a workable strategy for doing that, then that's great. But I'm going to call you on that question otherwise. And, you know, how are you going to keep the goats out of, if you're keeping a goat, how are you going to keep it out of your garden? And, you know, those sorts of things. So what you end up with is a design that the customer would be quite happy to go away with and implement, knowing that there's probably no major design flaws in it. Whereas otherwise it's kind of like, I mean, I even saw one design where a student had, they were building a house. It was a ferro cement house. And the reason that they were building a ferro cement house was that it could have a double skin and that all their water was stored between the walls of the house. And I'm like, wow. And I mean, so they said, oh, you know, it's quite practical and it's mass and it'll keep the house cool and whatever. And I went, how wide's the void in between the walls? Because I didn't want to poo-poo the idea. And so, like, how wide's the void between the walls? And how are you going to handle the, you know, creating the openings and all that? And they're like, oh, no, well, we'll sort it out. But the void between the walls was about a foot. So I said, how are you going to get someone in there to render those? Something as simple as that. And yet it was just, you know, huge optimism winning over any sense of practicality. So, you know, students just need a little bit of tweaking sometimes. And, I mean, we've all made silly mistakes, and it's good to correct them early.
So I want to do a quick comparison on what we're doing here versus Jeff Lawton's online PDC. I would imagine at this point in time, 5,000 people have taken Jeff Lawton's online PDC, and it's rare to find somebody that did not thoroughly enjoy it. I've nearly everybody I've ever talked to about it thought it was excellent and first rate and about as good as it's ever going to get. And I kind of feel like there's going to be, because when I talk to people about it, like, okay, well, how do you do the design work? Because you kind of need a lot of feedback for that. And it kind of sounds like you put together your design and then you send it in and then the response comes back, okay. And that was it. Like, your design is okay. I haven't asked too many people about that. Mostly what I've just heard is really great, really loved it, really enjoyed it, worth every penny kind of stuff. And I've only asked a couple of people, like, okay, well, what about the design? And it's like, basically you make the design and then you submit it and then you're told, you know, check mark. It's, you get a green check mark there. That part, you're that part of the course has now been satisfied, and you get to have your certificate for having completed a PDC. And I kind of feel like I would imagine that a lot of people that did that, they would might want to take this PDC in addition just so that they can have – so they can create a lot of designs. Because I think that if you just scratch something out and submit it and you get no feedback other than it's okay or it's not okay – maybe if it's not okay, you get a lot of feedback. But that's not a lot. So, and further, I kind of feel like from our conversations about this PDC, I was getting a general vibe that the average person would probably like create four different designs. Like they're going to have their paper down. They're going to scratch something out. It's going to be, you know, and then they're going to get a lot of feedback on that, and then they're going to then pull out a fresh piece of paper and make a new design based on what they've learned, and then a third one based on what they've now learned and the feedback that they got on the first three or the first two, and then the fourth one will be their final, the one that they make that's going to be presented on the last day of class. Now,
I think that there's probably going to be 1,000 designs as they're going through it in terms of they're constantly reevaluating and rubbing things out. And because that's what I always say is keep asking questions of yourself. You know, never accept that there's not a better arrangement, so keep tweaking and fine-tuning. And remembering, too, that this information's unfolding, so as they lay it down, some new information may bump something out of place, and so they've got to go back and correct it. So, you know, they'll be scribbling on butcher's paper till the point where, oh, that's getting too messy, let's get another one out. It's not redoing the whole design as such, but it's constantly evolving and to the point where, okay, I'm happy with this now, and that doesn't happen till right at the end. Now we transfer all this stuff onto our final design sheet. So the designs will be done on a large sheet of architectural tracing paper.
Mm-hmm.
And so everything will be, all the information will be transferred onto there, and people can use different techniques to do overlays and all sorts of stuff. So absolutely they would, I mean, if you were, it's hard to put a number on it, but they will be constantly redesigning and rejigging, and so the design will easily go through four iterations before they're done.
Okay.
Because they don't get enough information to leap ahead, and they get the information as they should be putting into the design, and there'll be a list will go out, will be given to the students, and we'll be saying, guys, by the end of today's design session, you know, you should have your, you know, your water and your access structure in place. You'll have done all your interviews. Now you should be thinking about, because tomorrow we've got trees, you know, by the end of that day, you might be looking at species lists and things like that to put in there, because we'll also, you know, we require that, you know, the drawings have to be to scale, so you have to show the various sizes of trees and you know, their fully grown size and acknowledge all those things. So there's constant redesigning in the course. It's not like we're here at the end and let's just get it slapped out because we're out of time. You know, you've got a lot of time to rejig and revalue and make it as good as you possibly can. I think the big thing too with the online PDC, and I've only ever heard good things from people too. I've got a couple of friends that have actually done it. And in fact, I've never heard a bad thing said about the online PDC. But I will say I will say that certainly it's applicable for people that just don't have the time and also don't necessarily have the money when you look at the cost of some of the PDCs around the place. But it misses, I think, well, I know because I originally did I did my first PDC online with another company in Australia that's got quite a good reputation, and they were backed by Jeff. Sorry, not Jeff, Bill. And that was Permaculture Innovations. And they did a really, really good job. But then going and working at PRI and teaching PDCs to people, you could see that some of the lessons of the PDC aren't necessarily in the curriculum, but they're in the interactions with the people on the ground. Suddenly, for the first time, maybe to be in a room full of people that get them if they, you know, use a term like peak oil or, you know, polyculture or whatever. And, you know, having to live in community for 2 weeks with these people and all these interactions is a huge part of what a PDC is all about. And, of course, unless you do it or you've done both, you don't know what to compare. You don't know that, oh, I'm missing this, because what you know is what you know. So, yeah, it's probably a very good option for a lot of people that don't have the time and they can pace themselves the way they want. But there's no getting around the fact that, you know, being in the same room is a far better experience. I mean, it's why we still prefer face-to-face meetings, even though we know using techniques like we're using now, we can talk from all over the world. Like you say, kind of phone it in. It's that, you know, we didn't evolve with these technologies, and so many of us are still comfortable or more comfortable and get more out of an experience being face-to-face with a person.
I think it's fair to say that the amount of time spent on design in this up-and-coming PDC would be probably four times more than what people spend going to other PDCs. Does that sound fair?
It's all design. I mean, this entire course is all design, because the relevance of each topic comes up, each technique and strategy slots into the design. They're just the tools. So, you know, that's what I see as wasted time almost, in that up until the last 3 days in a lot of PDCs, none of the information is relevant until they start doing their design. Yep. And so it's just information. It's, you know, people are supposed to sponge it up and remember it when it has no real relevance to their design. Now, so when they, yeah, go on.
This is a 14-day course. Yep. And that's pretty standard. These are all 14-day courses. And I've been to a lot of courses where it's like the course tends to start at 10 a.m., and then it goes until like 4:30 in the afternoon with an hour break for lunch or an hour and a half for lunch or something like that. And I kind of get the impression that it's like, okay, what are you going to sacrifice? Well, I know one of the things is that we start earlier and finish later in this PDC. And so it's kind of like there's that, but clearly in order to have four times more time working on designs than other PDCs, how are we pulling that off? How is that going to happen?
Okay, so we're giving each afternoon session over to the design process using the stuff that we've learned that day. The day is split up into 1.5 1.5 hour increments, so we have four of those, so a total of 6 hours teaching in the classroom or around the property each day. Now, the thing is that it's no use. It's not about how much bulk information you can cram into someone's head. It's about how much they retain. And every bit of information that we know about teaching says that people need breaks to assimilate. So about 1.5 hours is a good chunk of time. And then just as important is that we have a half hour break between each of those sessions, except for an hour break at lunch. And that lets people get together and discuss what they've learned. And that's where the assimilation of information comes from. We will also be having quite a few evening sessions, and generally what happens is the teachers are around anyway, and if students want to continue doing their design into the night, then that's fine too. So there's huge opportunities for learning, and what typically will happen is that people will start to drown in information, and, it won't be a case of, oh, we want more, we want more. It'll be, we want more, but, oh, God, we're tired, we want less, we want less. So they're kind of torn between greedily gobbling down every last bit of information they can get, but they're also stuffed full.
Okay, yeah, I think that was one of the things that was brought up last year that I thought was an interesting design consideration that we've started to make changes here in order to better facilitate that, is the whole I want less and I want more. And I think that I can't remember exactly what the guy said at the end of the PDC last year, or was the PDC or the ATC, but I thought it was really fascinating. He's like, okay, it's like drinking from the fire hose, and so I want less, but I also want more. And I kind of, I think that what I interpreted that to mean, which I think is really profound, is that we need to create more spaces where people can go and hang out and be able to visit with smaller groups. So like rather than like, oh, you can hang out in the classroom whenever you want, And we got this other space over here where you can cook some food if you want, and that's it. Or that instead we create like 5 or 6 different places that are sheltered, where people can go and hang out by themselves or with 2 or 3 other people, things like that. It helps a lot. I think the thing that I wanted by asking the question, if we're going to have more time spent on design, what gets sacrificed? I think one of the things we've been working on is
nothing.
Is how to concentrate the other parts and how to find more time to get more squeezed in during this 2 weeks. And we are doing a lot to like give people more open time, but at the same time, I think that the PDC things are going to be taught, the techniques and stuff like that, is going to be a bit more concentrated. And this is and in fact, here is something that has been asked of me for a PDC, and I haven't talked to you about it yet at all. And I think that the answer is there's nothing we're going to do about it this year, but maybe for possible future PDCs. And that is, to make a PDC that is designed for the person that has already read 10 books, listened to all of my podcasts, watched all sorts of videos, and has a lot of background now, and they kind of want something that's going to meet, they want to get the PDC certificate, but they kind of want the discussion to start at a higher level. And at a PDC that I helped to set up in 2012, I think that 40 of the 45 students that were there came from my podcast, and they had listened to like pretty much all of my podcasts, and they kind of felt like they wanted the PDC to assume that, to start with that assumption. I don't think we're going to do that this year, but maybe in a future year, but as far as that position, because I do feel like we're talking about concentrating some of the information, and I do think it helps to have really excellent instructors as well as really excellent guest instructors, which we're going to get to in a little bit. But what's your response to that? Like, what do you expect from when students show up?
Okay, so first off, the standard time of a PDC is normally 72 hours. So we'll be doing more than that anyway. If we don't count the middle day where we're having a full day off, I think there's still something like 78 hours. And that's not even including all the evening sessions that we're going to be throwing at people from all the guest presenters or the co-teachers. So there's a huge amount of information that will be there for them. I honestly, and I mean, some might find this shocking, but it's like if they come out of there fully understanding and have fully internalized the design process, and it's a process. It's not a method. It's not a recipe. It's teaching people enough that they can learn by themselves and make informed decisions. So if they come out of the PDC only knowing the design process on a deep internal level, then there's a whole world of resources out there to learn about the strategies and techniques, basically the tools to translate that design into the real world. And of course, the more they get of those tools, strategies and techniques, then the better a designer they become, because it's like being a painter. Suddenly every new skill they learn, every new technique they hear about becomes another color that they can add to their palette. And so the design becomes more subtle. So, you know, we're still doing a huge amount of, just as much as any other PDC, of practical stuff. The Wheaton Labs has got, it's great from the point of view of homesteading technologies, in that, you know, we've got the Wafatis, which are the partially underground or buried cabins. We've got composting toilets. We've got compost heated water. We've got rocket stoves up the wazoo all over the place. We've got cob. We've got solar dryers. We've got, you know, bermed buildings. There's a lot of stuff on site that in itself becomes an opportunity to teach just through the simple daily use and the questions that they ask. I mean, what better way to learn about a composting toilet than actually have to use one each day? And maybe even if you're lucky, get involved in actually emptying the bins out. So I encourage your students to get their hands dirty.
This podcast is continued in part two.
Don't forget, go out to patreon.com/Paul Wheaton and make a pledge for future artifacts.